You are listening to the In Context podcast.
Welcome to another edition of the In Context podcast. Today we're going to be speaking about church partnerships. And with us we have Graham Thompson again from Cleckheaton and our special guest and WWE fan, Dan Green from Banstead Community Church in Banstead. How are you doing, Dan? How are you doing, Graham?
Yeah, not bad. Thanks, Ian.
All right, bud. Good to be back.
Good. And tell us a little bit about WWE, Dan. Have you got any characters on your shelf?
Well, you can see The Undertaker's there, Legion of Doom. I'm really a product of my childhood, late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah. We should have really had Steve Walker on here this week because he's a massive fan as well. So, although he does get upset if you mention any acting in that, but brilliant. Yeah, I think the last time I watched it, was it Rick McManus and Hulk Hogan and back in the day? Yeah. So you're a WWE fan. Was it Crystal Palace fan?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's not talk about that at the moment.
And you're a Southerner?
Yep. Yeah.
And you're quite sensible by all accounts. So what is a WWE fan who supports Crystal Palace and a pastor of a church down south doing in partnership with somebody who's as blunt and undiplomatic as me up in the north of England? How did that come about, Dan?
I guess really the story begins with two things that happened in the life of the church. For, I guess, about 10 plus years, we've been having a trainee pastor program. We've been getting guys in with us for a couple of years, training them up and then sending them out to other places to bless the wider church. And the Church of Banstead has been incredibly generous and putting aside a fair amount of resources in order for that to happen. And so we've been doing that for a number of years, and we came to a point where we couldn't take on another trainee pastor. We'd done four guys had come through the program, and then we just didn't have the resources to do it. So we decided we were going to take a year or two, or however many years it would be, until there was money, resources to be able to take it up again. And so that sort of coming to a close gave a concern amongst the elders about being very insular and looking inwards. And all our energy, all our resources were going to Banstead, but we wanted to keep on blessing the wider church. We wanted to have an interest in the gospel going out further afield than just our local community. And so that sort of started triggering off a conversation amongst us of where can we support. We didn't have a full-time mission, overseas missionary that we were linked to. Most of our efforts to mission was sending these guys out to other places. And so that got us looking, who could we be involved with? Who could we support, whether that be an individual or a church? But then sort of going alongside that, we also, through John Stevens giving sort of his regular stats of where the gospel was going in the UK and making clear that there was an uneven spread of both churches and resources, where the southeast, where we're based, was very blessed. We were made aware that obviously in the north, and particularly amongst the sort of poorer urban estates, there was a greater gospel need. And so one of the questions that came out from the church was, is there anything we can do? Which I suppose at the time of answering, of a question being asked, I just didn't have a clue. I sort of shrugged my shoulders and said, yeah, what can a small mid-sized church like ours do to support this work over there? So we're at sort of a loss. But what it did do was get the church praying for the north, for the poorer communities, for some rural areas, seaside towns, where the great gospel need in the country is. It sort of spontaneously happened at our weekly prayer meeting. So those two things sort of came to a head, really, when our last training pastor was finishing up and we knew we weren't going to take another one on. We sort of got to a stage where, well, is there someone who may be in these harder to reach areas of gospel need that we could partner with and support in some way? And I guess that's where he got to the sort of the moment of, well, yeah, that'd be great, but where do we go?
Yeah, so that is a difficulty, isn't it? There must be a number of churches with a heart and a desire to help support churches in hard-to-reach places who are maybe struggling financially and with resources. But the question is then, how do you find these churches to support them, especially if you're 250 miles south of where these churches are that need support? And so what did you start doing to look for a church? What kind of difficulties did you face while trying to find a church to support?
I guess the biggest question, like you just said, was where do you start? Most of the contacts I had were other pastors of local churches in the area I was in, like London. Most of the pastor friends I knew were based in churches in London, which is just as far away from the north as Banstead is, being on the border of southwest London. So it was a case of, right, where do we start? There were people on Twitter that I followed who I was aware of were in northern churches. I was aware of Gospel Yorkshire and Graham. I was aware of Steve Neal because of his blog. And I was aware of you because you were basically winding up people on Twitter. I had a few people that I was aware of, but I had no relationship with and didn't have a number for them. I probably could have got an email off the website, but it was sort of a really, I could have just sort of put a pin in the map up north and see if anyone's there. We didn't have any links to anyone up north or in one of these hard to reach in places outside the sort of London area. Like I knew of people who were in harder situations in London, but really we wanted to broaden out of London, go further afield. So yeah, we're in a sort of a state of, we didn't really know what to do or where to go. We just had an idea that this would be something that we'd like to happen. What changed, I think, I'd say, in the providence of God, you came to speak at a Hub conference in January, Tim, 2 years ago. Hub conference is the FIC training conference for those who are looking to get into ministry or who are currently training. And I've been sort of involved in that for a number of years. And then you came and spoke at it. And seeing your name on the sort of ticket for the event, I said to the elders, well, we've made no progress really in trying to find someone to partner with or a church to partner with. But here we go. There's a guy on this conference who's from a sort of setting that we're looking at. Shall I have a go? Shall I see if I can grab 5 minutes with him and see if that's a goer, see if you're interested?
Yeah, I remember that. And I remember my response to my wife after you came up to me and said, would I be interested in having a chat for 5 minutes? Because I was totally unaware that any church down south would be interested in partnering with a church like ours. I thought really that people weren't interested in supporting our ministry. I'd been involved in ministry since 2007. First of all, I set up a charity, a Christian charity, which main purpose was evangelistic. Because there was no churches on the council estates, I was going on to the council estates and preaching the gospel. And this is where New Life Church was birthed out of, a charity called 68.5. A lot of people said to me, what are you going to do if people get saved? What church will you send them to? I said, what bridge? That's a problem I'd love to have. I'll cross that bridge when I come to it. And after a couple of years, I had to cross that bridge. So we planted New Life Church. But I'd spent, my time was spent between training, running a small church plant and traveling the country trying to raise support. I'd put articles in Christian press. I'd visited churches to speak and share. And people were keen to hear my testimony and talk about how I got saved, but they weren't really keen in supporting us financially. A lot of people would say, I'll get in touch. We'd like to support you. And not diminishing prayer support, which is essential, but that was pretty much all we got. And often when I was at a conference or something like that, I'd meet with a middle-class Christian and just out of embarrassment, they'd say, like what you said, oh, you'll have to tell me a bit more about your ministry. I'd like to support you. and then I'd never see them again or hear from them again. So when you came up to me and said to me that you'd like to grab 5 minutes from me, I just said to my wife, she said, are you going to arrange to have a coffee with him? And I said, no. I said, he's just making small talk. Middle-class people can't stand silence. I thought you were just trying to fill in 5 minutes while you were stuck with me. So I just dismissed you as soon as I met you, unfortunately. Yeah. So that was interesting. So how did you find that first meeting, considering I wasn't really forthcoming and or that interested in developing the conversation?
I think I probably was trying to just get through the meeting without offending you, really.
It's usually the other way around when people talk to you.
Sorry?
It's usually the other way around when people talk to you, and they try to get to the meeting without being offended.
Yeah, well, I think I was slightly conscious that Ian was almost coming into sort of my safe zone, like in like Hub Conference. The majority of pastors and even attendees are from middle class churches, fundamentally, like a lot of it, conservative evangelicalism is today, and so sort of aware that I did not understand having an idea of how he even felt being at his conference, whether he even wanted to be at a conference or not. It was more of a case of I was trying not to upset you. But also at the same time, just trying to somehow get a relationship or some form of common ground where we could sort of explore further. Mm. But I wasn't sort of expecting a huge amount. If I could get you to visit, well, that would have been a bonus on the initial meeting.
Well, that was the other thing. I was gutted that I give you my details, and a couple of weeks later, you actually got in touch and invited me down to Banstead. And several years ago, that invitation would have filled me with excitement. But when I got the email, I was like, oh, flipping heck. I'm going to have to travel 6 hours there, spend the day with a load of people, waffle on, and come back and then never hear from them again. When I asked Rachel to come with me, she didn't want to, because other churches we'd been to in the past, she'd just been ignored. So the experience we'd had of visiting churches to develop partnerships was quite a negative one. The only churches that had been a blessing, really, where we'd had one in Coventry because the pastor was kind of coming from a similar background to me. So he was really encouraging and welcoming. There was obviously Mez up in Scotland who was a similar character to me, and there was a guy called Duncan in London as well, a working class guy who made us feel different. But every other church we'd gone to, we just felt like outsiders. And yeah, it just really felt unwelcome. And again, understanding now that they probably felt like we were really rude as well, because culturally we give off vibes without knowing it, don't we? So when I first had that invitation, my wife didn't want to travel with me. My daughter didn't want to travel with me. I didn't particularly want to go.
Is that why you sweetened them by taking them to Legoland first?
Yeah. Honestly, the only reason they came with me because I took them to Legoland for 2 days before. But when we got there, we were blown apart. I think first of all, spending time with you and Kate and the boys, and I think what swung it for me was Wesley saying, "What's that spot on your face?" to Rachel after about 30 seconds, and I thought, oh, I love this family. I feel part of this family already. So yeah, I think Wes swung the deal for us.
Can I interrupt? Just like from Rachel's point of view and Esther, just how did they feel coming into our home? Obviously, you pulled up before, you came around for an hour or so before you joined our prayer meeting.
Yeah.
Just what was their perception of it?
Well, the perception of Banstead initially was like, flipping heck, we don't fit in around here for starters. And then outside the house as well, it was, yeah, I think they were a bit worried. Rachel was like, Esther, don't be kicking off in here. Don't be showing us up. Because Esther's a bit like me. If she doesn't like something, she doesn't keep it to herself. And Rachel was quite nervous, wondering how she'd be judged. I think Rachel's mixed, because some of the time she's like devastated, worrying about what am I going to say. First of all, she's hoping I'm not going to say anything to embarrass her. But on the other side as well, she's concerned and fearful that we're going to get hurt. So I think a lot of responses to us have been quite hurtful in the past. So she was mixed with not wanting me to kick off and show her up without somebody else saying something that would be offensive and put her husband down. So yeah, so she wasn't really looking forward to it at all. Yeah, just had to promise her an eternity ring. So she
How did you feel though, Dan, as like, because I guess if the church had been looking for this kind of, looking to partner with a church from a different background, different culture, everything like that, and then was there anything about you thinking, Ian's going to turn up and he's going to set something up particularly Ian-like, and the all this partnership thing's going to go down the toilet? Was it those kind of things as you started off, or was it?
I think there was a lot of unknown. Like I think for one, maybe what had helped the situation in terms of sort of in one, bridging a gap was, recently we had a guy join us and wonderfully saved him through the ministry of my co-worker at Banstead, who wasn't a typical middle class family individual who lived in Banstead, had come into the church and the church had grown to love him and got used to someone who wasn't immediately like them. And so I think because of that, it wasn't like as sort of chalk and cheese as it could have been. And so Ian came in, we gave him a free range for a prayer meeting just to share about new life. And yeah, maybe it's testimony to just the folk in the church. I think they were just fascinated by it. I think it was a heart for finding out more. I think Ian's story was compelling to them. I think the difficulty then comes is about a partnership becoming, was it going to become an Ian-centered partnership, or whether it be a church-centered partnership? And I think that was probably in the back of my mind was, are we looking to partner with an individual, or actually do we want to do something slightly harder and actually partner with a church? But the benefits of partnering with a church is that it goes on past the individual's lifetime at that church. And so I think after a first meeting, I couldn't really tell which way it was going to go. I think the people liked Ian. I think a lot of them got an opportunity to speak to Rachel and to Esther, which was great. So they got to know them as a family. But yeah, it was hard to tell what would come of it from that sort of initial Thursday prayer meeting that they came along to.
So how did you guys work to do that then? Because obviously, like, partnering with an individual is good, isn't it? You know, we want partnerships where people say we want to support a planter or a pastor or, you know, a missionary or whatever and bung a bit of money in that. But how did you, you're right, Dan, developing a partnership between two churches is much more difficult, isn't it? So how did you guys work to do that?
I guess myself and Ian had a conversation quite early on in talking about partnership and what we understood by partnership. Like I was fairly upfront and honest and said, look, we've never done anything like this before. And we're basically making it up as we go along in the sense that we have no idea what we are to do. We've got no model that we can copy. It doesn't seem to fit with some of the other partnerships that we've seen in our area, like Co-Mission, where it's very much, because they're all local, they can do a lot of stuff together and they can have central hubs. And that. This is from a church in the southeast to a church in the northeast. There's a lot of barriers, and the biggest barrier is actually just the distance initially. So I think what we are fairly honest from the start and saying, look, we haven't a clue really what your setting is like, what your context is like. We don't understand, like, we understand Banstead, but we don't understand Middlesbrough. In fact, I think very few people in the church had actually ever been to Middlesbrough. So that's one thing. We're not based on an estate. We're based in a sort of approaching rural village. And we're sort of somewhere between a rural village and a town. That's very different to what Ian's and New Life are ministering on. So I think we were quite clear from the start of we're not going to be able to tell you what to do in because actually we don't know the people, we don't know the context. So we're going to be no help there. But is there a way in which we can together bring our churches as closely aligned as is possible with all the obstacles? And I guess the first point was just taking an interest in one another's church. I think that was really the first thing we did, and then praying for one another. And that's all it was initially. From Ian, after the prayer meeting, Ian then came to preach, and that's really where we left it after that first visit to the church on a Sunday. Was we'll carry on taking an interest in you as a church, and we'll regularly pray for you. And that was our initial commitment in terms of a partnership.
How did folks at New Life react, Ian? Is it, we want a partnership with the church and they're not going to give us any money? It's like, well, what's the point of that?
Well, we didn't even discuss that. So I was constantly travelling. So the church, I was often away, travelling to different churches and speaking here, there and everywhere. So I think they had lost count who I was speaking to and what I was speaking to them about. So they just let me get on with it. But I think initially, going back to Rachel and Esther, that was the first time we'd been to a church outside of my friend's church, Mezzi's up in Scotland and down in Coventry, that we had been welcomed as friends, really. They were genuinely interested in Rachel and in Esther. And I wasn't, like you say, the centre of attention. It wasn't about supporting Ian or my testimony or my ministry. It was about, we're genuinely interested in your church and in your town, which is what I want people to be interested in, the town and the need for Middlesbrough, not just New Life Church. So that was the first thing. So Rachel went back. I think she went back more excited than she had done from most other churches. So Rachel's excitement went on within the church. She shared what lovely people were, how nice Dan and Kate were, and the people who she'd been chatting with. Yeah, Esther was buzzing. She was looking forward to go back, probably because we'd go to Legoland again. But so that started it. But again, I think there was, didn't we have visitors pretty quick? It wasn't long. I think we kind of, somebody from one church or another was at our church or at your church every month, just from
So you came down in June.
Yeah.
To preach at our services. I think we then had a church meeting later that month, so in June. And at that meeting, I basically said to the church, as an elder, we think it would be good to actively pursue a partnership with New Life Church. It didn't really come as a big surprise to the church. I think when Ian came the second time and shared about the work, the members knew where it was heading. They were already on board with the idea of, it can't all be about Banstead. We need to look out. I think they got to know Ian and Rachel and enjoyed what they heard and getting to know them. So there was already sort of some formation of a relationship had come about. So when I got up at a church meeting and said, look, we're actively pursuing it, it was almost like the church was going, well, about time, because that was where they're expecting. At that meeting, I said, we're going to carry on being interested in the church. We're going to carry on praying for the church. We're going to make that a regular part of our prayer meetings, praying for what's going on at New Life. But then I said, there's some other ways I think we can support and develop this partnership. At some point, there'll be a financial element. But at that stage, we weren't in a position to make any decisions on that as of yet. But I said, the other thing is actually, let's take our interest to a new level. Some of you are going to go on holiday. If you're going on holiday up north somewhere to Yorkshire Dales or on the Yorkshire Moors or that part of the world, well, why don't you go to church at New Life? If you're within 2 hours of where the church meets, just get up early and drive. They have their service at 11:30, so you don't even have to get up that early. so I started encouraging people, if they're up in that direction on a Sunday, to actually choose New Life as a church to go and visit on holiday. And my co-worker in one of his sermons basically encouraged people to not go on holiday in Cornwall, but to go on holiday up in the northeast area in order to do that. And as I was talking about that in a church meeting, there was a couple in the church who had actually got their phone out and had typed in the post code for New Life Middlesbrough to work out how far it was from where they were going on holiday. And that was the next month they were with you in July. So end of July, I think, a month after this sort of church meeting where we said we're going to pursue this, there was someone from the church at New Life. I think later in August, Shell was down, I think it was. I think then in September, it literally was a month after month, there was either someone coming from New Life down to Banstead or someone from Banstead either purposely choosing to go on holiday up there so they could visit the church, or was up there for some other reason. But so myself and Kate have been up, I think, three times to that sort of that area at some point. We've got other people in the church who've gone to visit people. Like, I think, like, was it last Christmas? There was a couple from our church were up saying at Saltburn, and they came over and saw you on Christmas Day. They saw the magnificent harp at your service.
Yeah, we've been bragging about church in hard places, and that we don't have we have to use iTunes music. I sing worship because we didn't have a worship band, and then they turn up and we've got some woman playing a massive harp. So our image of being like bog standard was smashed. But yeah, no, it was great to have them. It was nice to have them on Christmas Day as well. And then we went and spent time with them after the service, went to spend the evening with them in the flat in Saltburn where they were staying. So yeah, we as members, it's not just the church leadership who are building relationships, but it's also the church members and the stay in touch. And I think last time I was up was probably when COVID kicked off, and I think we either turned up in Banstead with COVID or left with it. But that was the last time we were there. And
that was just back off the back of Hannah and Shell helping with our holiday club, wasn't it?
Yeah, they'd been down to help out with the holiday club. And then we came down again to spend some time then. We were planning to be going backwards and forth again this year, obviously, until COVID. And that could have had a kind of put the brakes on a little bit with our partnership. But I think COVID has helped our churches grow closer together, especially with having the online prayer meetings. So we've been, as a church, meeting once a month for prayer meetings. Yeah. And some of our staff have been joining weekly for weekly prayer meetings. And I've been on sabbatical for 3 months as well, so it's been good for me not to be around to see that this partnership continues without me there, whereas Dan's been helping Nathan. Nathan was looking after the place while I was on sabbatical, so Dan was meeting with Nathan weekly and supporting him once a week. Yeah, so a lot greater than financial. It's been really relational amongst the leadership. Me and Dan and Rachel and Kate have become good friends. So I think whether I stay in Middlesbrough or Dan stays in Banstead, our relationship as friends will continue, but also the relationship between New Life Church and Banstead hopefully will continue regardless of who's the pastor.
And I think that is the case, is people from the churches have actually got to know one another in the church. So it's not just about pastor to pastor level. It is a different member of staff, to members of a church, members of a church to other members of a church. And I know that some of the people have been either texting or WhatsApping one another. There's a real concern and I think love for one another that's grown. I think this COVID crisis has been brilliant actually for cementing and strengthening the partnership. To be able to do a combined prayer meeting a couple of weeks into lockdown, it was great, and to continue that on every month has been brilliant. Having Nathan and Shell join in with weekly prayer meetings has been great, because also if people see him regularly as well. So New Life is very much part of the circle of of interest for Banstead. So it'd be unusual for a prayer meeting to go by or a week to go by where something to do with New Life isn't prayed for, even if it's just in passing, because they're on the radar all the time.
Yeah, and again, not diminishing financially, but the support financially has been unbelievable as well. So although the greatest long-term benefit is the relational side of things, short-term, we've had a full-time women's worker paid for through the generosity of Banstead Community Church as well. Somebody who we'd have had to have let go, who had trained with us for a couple of years, and we found funding for her for a year or two, and then unfortunately we couldn't find funding to keep her on, but Banstead came along and said, what is your greatest need financially? And they very generously covered the full salary costs for over a year now for one of our female gospel workers.
So it's interesting because, like you said, Dan, like that you almost, from your description, you didn't need to sell this to the members. It was like they were just up for it. And I guess a lot of, maybe even I'm going to say a lot of pastors watching this, or one of them, might be saying, well, I'd love that. But did you, what did you do anything to kind of build this desire for the church to partner with churches? Or was it just something that the Lord did kind of with you doing nothing? I mean, you explained about the training pastor not being able to do that or anything, but I think a lot of pastors will be saying, I'd love it if my church were this excited about partnering with a church in a place we've never really heard of.
I guess probably it's both. I think we want to acknowledge that the Lord has been at work in this situation in quite a marvelous way. One of the things when Kate and I get together with Ian and Rachel, we will often tell parts of the story again, as you might your favourite when you went on holiday with your mates to some, and it was a great time. You tell the story, and I think I look at it on rehearsing the Lord's goodness in this partnership. And once that you can't do it enough, like any opportunity to tell the story is. You want to do it because God has done a marvelous thing, and He deserves all the praise for it. I don't think either myself or Ian would have been able to imagine that in the space of 2 years, what has come about has come about. I think we've got to say that the Lord has done this. But in terms of the church being up for it, I guess probably that started several years before we'd even thought about the option of a partnership. So when we even had previous trainee pastors were still in the midst of their serving with us and being trained by us, I think it was already things were in place. So I think I was probably talking about the gospel need in the country fairly regularly. So I'd look for opportunities to share the different stats, whether it be naturally in a sermon or at a prayer meeting, just to be able to keep in the mind of the members, look, we are very blessed in the area of the country we're in, but that isn't the same in every other part of the country. There are lots of other places where there's not as many. Just like there's about 100 good gospel churches of a variety of different sizes, probably within 5-10 miles of Banstead. Like it's ridiculous. Like there's FIC churches everywhere in the area I'm in. That's not the case at other places. So I was constantly communicating that to others, trying to talk about how we're on the same team with like these other churches that are faithful are not the enemy. They're not rivals. It's not us v them. We're not competing against them to see who can be the biggest and the best. We're working together on the same mission, the same cause. And if the Lord chooses to bless another church and not us, well, we want to praise Him for that. He knows what He's doing, and He knows how He wants to use different churches at different times. I think I was struck by some of the stuff Nine Marks do, have come out of Nine Marks, how they constantly pray for other churches, other local churches. And so looking to do that, just to try and help people see the relationship between one local church and the rest of the local churches in this country, in the world. I think it's just helpful to try and get in the DNA of church and church life. So I think those things were being already embedded prior to this. So I think probably the leap wasn't as big because the church was already aware that there was gospel need in the rest of the country, and working with other local churches shouldn't be, it's not them and us, it's us together. And so I think probably those two were already sown into the ground. I think we were trying to, I think praying for other parts of the country, places of gospel need, sort of happened organically, spontaneously. But then because the leaders picked up that that was happening, they then actively put that as a regular thing to pray for as well. So I think it's a bit of both, and sharing with the members, seeing where the Lord moves the members, and then sort of going with that as well, sort of laid the groundwork for when it came to the time when we said, look, we need to develop a partnership. I think the church was already ready. So we're probably talking a couple of years before even I met Ian, that the seeds and the groundwork was being laid.
Do you think that the cultural differences are probably greater amongst the leadership of the churches than or makes it, the barriers are greater between the working class and middle class leaders of churches rather than the congregations? Because what I found is our church members seem to have got on a lot better and a lot easier than we did to start with. There just seemed to be a natural integration, whereas I think there's barriers amongst leaders probably more than there is membership. Would you agree with that? Or
I suppose it was the members sort of came at it at a different point. So yeah. I think probably the initial sort of sparring between me and you, the sort of just feeling one about seeing how we react to one another. We'd sort of done that. So that by the time the members got involved, the initial hurdle had already been overcome because we had dealt with that. I think if you're trying to do it probably with that initial bringing together leaders and members at the same time, it may have looked differently.
Yeah.
But I think probably because the members trusted us and we had already overcome that barrier, it made it, we sort of removed an obstacle that may have been there otherwise.
I guess a question a lot of people, churches like yourselves, Dan, are asking when they're looking at partnerships with churches in, you know, other parts of the country or hard places or whatever. I guess pastors and that elders are aware of people in the church kind of saying, well, what's in it for us? You know, it's kind of not in a cynical way or anything, but you know, obviously we want to help churches, but what benefits does a larger church get helping a small church in a hard place or a forgotten place or whatever? Because obviously you've seen great benefits. What are some of those benefits you've seen in partnering with New Life?
I think it's probably one benefit will be true of supporting any organization, mission, individual, church that's not in your precise location. We're called to make disciples of all nations. Realistically, the only way that a church can be involved in the all nations side of the discipleship is either by praying, by sending our own folk, by giving money, which are always a sort of free that every mission speaker trots off as, this is either we want you to pray, and is there someone who can go, or can you give us some money? But I think actually this is a fourth way of doing it, actually saying, by supporting or partnering with what this another church is doing, in essence, we are involved in that disciple-making mission. So Banstead is involved in making disciples in Middlesbrough. Because we are linked to a church, partnering with a church who is making disciples in Middlesbrough. And so there's an obedience issue right from the start. We're called to make disciples of all nations. Primarily that will begin for us in Banstead, but we want it to be have some involvement further away. Like, we're going to be limited in how much of a nation's or even a country we can be involved in. But here's just a small way of doing it. In the same way, being part of FIC means we can say we're involved in trying to reach the whole of the UK, because we're one of 600 and something churches who are scattered around in different places. So I think initial benefit is to say we've been caught up in the wider purposes of what the Lord Jesus is doing in the UK. He's making disciples of, he's building his church, not just in Banstead, but in other locations. And we get to be involved in that and actually see and get a front row of what he's doing in another part of the country. Like, we've got the awesome privilege of hearing quickly about any encouragement, any change, any progress of what the Lord's doing in Middlesbrough through this partnership. And it's just greatly encouraging and exciting. Like, I think probably what's also happened is when ministry may be going slower in Banstead, it seems to have accelerated in Middlesbrough. And so it stops you even getting the sort of going down a pity party of how your church is happening, because you're seeing the excitement of what else is happening in another part. But if they're struggling and they can see in what's happening with us, it's going both ways all the time. I think it's good to know brothers and sisters who aren't necessarily like you, to hear about how ministry is hard, different, not necessarily harder, but different to your setting. I think probably challenge of some of the ideas that they might do in Middlesbrough, we may look and think, they'll never work in Banstead. And right, it may never work in Banstead, but it's wonderful to see it working in Middlesbrough. And it reminds us that the Lord uses different instruments and different means for his glory to save and to build up his people. So I think there's some initial ones where saying, yeah, we're not getting money from New Life Middlesbrough. We haven't gone into a partnership to get money from them, but we're being prayed for, which is wonderful to know. I don't think any church leader will ever complain about another church or another church leader or another Christian praying for their work. I think we're aware of our weakness and our need for the Lord to be at work. And sometimes we need to be strengthened by the prayers of those outside. We've benefited from Shell and Hannah coming to help with our Holiday Bible Club. Like, that was just great to have those two getting stuck in, working side by side with them. We benefited from Ian coming to preach for us during lockdown when I needed a week off on a Sunday. Ian and Nathan sent videos down so that they could preach for us while just to give me a bit of time off. I think there's been lots of benefits at prayer meetings. It's not just me who sort of led the introductory word at the start. Ian's done it. Nathan's done it. So both of us, both churches are benefiting from different voices. Mm. And Ian preaches differently to how I do. And that's great. And it's good for the church to be exposed to different kinds of preaching. Not saying one's better than the other. It's saying the Lord uses different people and the different gifts and the different personalities they've got to bless his people.
Yeah. It's also been good, I think, for you to understand where I've been coming from, where you were put in a situation where you probably felt for the first time in a church setting how I felt a lot of my time when you came and visited us for that week away in Medhurst. How did you find that when you first stand up?
Yeah, so Kate and I and the kids came on your Medhurst week, and the first night, I think it was, you're going around talking to all the different pastors there, talking about the situations they're in, and me and Kate just sat there, increasingly feeling more uncomfortable, feeling like we're absolute frauds being present at this week, because it came down to you and I was saying, yeah, we're not a really small church. We've got enough people in the church to comfortably do ministry week on week. If a number of people are missing from church, the place doesn't feel empty or we can't do stuff. we financially we were in a good position. Resource wise, we had, I think, with two members of staff, and so we weren't on our own, and we just sort of sat there, and we're just feeling more and more uncomfortable. We're thinking, why are we here? Like, everyone around us must just hate us and hate our situation.
But fortunately, that wasn't the case.
No.
Yeah, and you've learned a lot as well, haven't you? I think you've learned about statistics in Brazil as well, haven't you? When we were at the FIEC Leaders Conference.
Well, I think that's been one of the benefits of this partnership is we've almost been introduced to our own worlds. Yeah. So through you, I've got to know the other guys at Medhurst and their churches. So that when we came to like the FIEC Leaders Conference, like you bumped into Graham and just sat down and carried on having a chat with him. Like that wouldn't have happened had we not been on that Medhurst week. Same with Matt Oliver. Like those, we didn't know each other prior to that Medhurst week. So there's been a benefit there. Obviously, I've got to know. I met Mez and I met Sam, who works with, been working alongside him. So just with that, it's sort of opened up and meet myself to people that I would have never necessarily come into contact with, and in the same way, maybe us having this partnership has given you opportunities or invites to other local churches in the south and about middle class that may not have wanted to take a punt on you.
Definitely, no. That has been a big shift. I think in the FIEC, especially in England, we are probably the first churches to do what we've done. And I'm hoping that the example that we've set hopefully will encourage other churches to partner across cultures, across between the North and South, and get people to maybe take a risk, a calculated risk, obviously not just punting on anything, but building relationships in a similar way that we did, and seeing that the benefits come both ways. It's not just the giving church and the receiving church, but both churches are giving something and receiving something. It might be different what they give, but both churches are giving, aren't they? So, Graham, have you got any more thoughts or questions?
I guess not particularly. I mean, obviously, my big question to the world is, can we have someone like Dan, please? if you're out there. I guess my only other question for you is, for you, Ian, is just kind of like, what if you said, here are the three things we want from, like, or we've got from Banstead that a smaller church would want, what would those things be? If you're saying, this is what we want from a partnership, what are the kind of things that you would be saying to people who were maybe looking to partner with churches like ours?
Yeah, I think first and foremost it is relationships between the leadership and the members, meeting regularly. I think now churches are so used to doing things on Zoom that any church now could meet regularly once a month, and that's something that we're planning on continuing past lockdown and COVID, is to continue meeting online regularly. So visiting one another, the encouragement we have, just have a new face in the congregation. When sometimes on a Sunday you've just got eight faces, and then a family, a husband and wife and the two kids turns up, it makes a huge difference, especially for the people that were preaching, just to see other faces, but not just for the preacher, but also for the other members. So they show hospitality to these people. And then again, on the other side, to go and visit other churches and see church in a different culture and context. And I think what we want is our people to see beyond Middlesbrough in the way that Dan wants to see beyond Banstead. We want to fulfil our mandate as well, to make disciples of all people. And if we can help make disciples in Banstead, then that's awesome. That's something we want to be able to do. We want to be Tret as partners. Dan said earlier that I have an analogy that I use all the time. I'll probably be using it for another 30 years. But I mentioned it a couple of weeks ago. My dad used to send a cheque. I never saw him. but he'd send a check every Christmas, and I'd spend that money, and it was useful, but he was never a father. I think churches need money, but money produces short-term fruit. Relationships produce long-term fruit. So we need the temporary support, but we also need the long-term support. And the long-term support, I think, is what gets us through the dark parts. When I know that Dan's there as a friend praying for me, and the members of Banstead are there praying for us as a church, that helps me out and phone Dan when I feel like packing in. When I've had enough, I'll speak to Dan, and he'll come at a different angle. He'll listen to me, he'll show empathy, but he'll also give me insight from, like, get your head from out there, look above the clouds and see what God is doing. So that support, that personal support as well, is invaluable, because isolation is the biggest, I think, for any pastor feels isolated, but in the type of ministry we're doing, where there's not another church around for 10, 15, 20 miles, it's exasperated. So that relational side. Financial is good, but that I see that as temporary. The long-term thing is relational. So I think hopefully that's answered your question there. Anything else that comes will come out of that relationship. I think if you've got that relationship, then the financial side will come when the churches can afford it. The prayer will come, the support will come. But first of all, you've got to build that relationship, wanting to serve one another and remembering that we are in the same business, that is to glorify God and to make disciples.
I think just to add to it from my perspective, I think there's two key things I think were really, really helpful in forming this partnership was, one, even though there was an initial reluctance, the key thing was Ian actually and Rachel and the church were keen to pursue this partnership. In the past, honestly, we've tried to do some form of partnership with another church, and the biggest problem of it was all one way. We were trying to instigate something, we got no real interest in return apart from, yeah, we'd like some money from you. And that's not a partnership. That's basically, you just want some money off a church you perceive to be very wealthy and have loads of cash spare, which actually Banstead doesn't. But actually, that's not what we're looking at. But that's no real difference to all these mission organisations that send through their magazines with their donation slips each month. But they're not interested in a relationship with you. They just want you, your support. And that is fine. And there's times when churches, that's all they can do, because it requires a lot of emotional energy to have more than just a contributing some finances type relationship. And there's mission organisations that we support, but don't have a relationship with. We think they're doing a good work, and we just want to give some financial support to it while we can, when we can. So I think there's having an interest from both sides. So when we actually, like Ian really made it, me feel like, yes, I'm really up for this. I really want there to be this partnership between the two churches. There was a real effort from both sides to meet together. So I think that was really helpful from my perspective. And I think the other thing was, Ian never came at it from asking for money from day one. Like back really, money didn't even come in till probably 6 months after the initial conversation we had. But us at Banstead weren't naive enough to think that we could have this partnership and never ever give any financial support, because that's just ridiculous. But we never felt they were just coming with asking for money and that was it. And also, we were able to talk with them honestly and say, look, what we can support now may not be what we can support in a year's time. It may be that our support for the churches goes up and down depending on circumstances. And I think particularly at this very moment in time, that just could be the reality for most churches. I think COVID crisis is going to hit finances of a lot of churches, and there'll be some who may want to be able to give, but just have taken such a hit in the last 9 months that they just can't. But that doesn't mean in 9 months' time or in 2 years' time, they aren't able to. And I think but if you've got that relationship, that can keep going throughout that period until maybe an opportunity does for the for a church to be able to commit finances in a way that they'd like to.
I guess my final question then, Ian, is say someone's watching this and they're thinking, we'd love to partner with the Medhurst Ministries Church. What do they do?
Yeah, well, first of all, they get in touch by logging on to www.medhurstministries.com. Then there'll be contact details of the churches on there. You can contact the churches individually, or you can contact Medhurst Ministries and arrange to come along to our first ever vision trip, which will be happening, God willing, in October 2021, where we'll have a weekender where there will be talks from each of the different churches involved. We will be sharing about our ministry and preaching the gospel. And then we will have the opportunity to visit each church that's involved, where you can spend a few hours with each planter and pastor and see the work that they're doing firsthand, meet some of the members, and if you like, after that, can then support the ministry. Or if you want to do that, you can just get in touch and come and visit if you're in the same tier as us. Yeah, you can come
out.
But yeah, just get in touch, investigate, speak with us, speak to the pastors, and or if you're a smaller church who wants to get involved with Medhurst Ministries, then get in touch and see how we might be able to help you. What we want to do is we want to see the churches in the north of England in particularly reach for the gospel of Jesus Christ. We want to support existing churches and plant new churches. Brilliant. It's been great chatting with you, Dan. Thanks for your time. Thanks for your time, Graham, and hopefully we will have Dan back on in the future, because he does more than talk about partnerships. He's got a great blog as well, Blog of Dan. It'll be good to talk about culture and class and the differences in the future as well. But until then, God bless. Have a great new year. I'll stop recording now.